At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
I reported on the show, best-in-class providers pay less for their staff. And I've also talked about it a number of times, 30% of providers losing money. So let's go to the source. Let's talk to service leadership. And Peter Kujawa joins me on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Peter, I'm super excited for you to join me today. Thanks for taking the time out.
Well, I'm super excited to be here, Dave. Thanks. It's a great pleasure to be on with you at long last. Been trying to get together for a while.
It has taken us a while to make this all happen. So I'm going to start by, because I want to dive right into something that's been gnawing me. I covered this 2023 annual compensation report that you and service leadership put out. And there's some data in there that's a little bit of a head scratcher. When I took a look at what you saw from a staff perspective, from a comp perspective, like just in terms of pay, the best in class are paying less than the median and less than the bottom quarter. And that feels counterintuitive because you'd think that the best in class would be paying the most for the best people. What are we getting wrong when we look at this analysis based on what you're seeing from the data?
Yeah, if you look at it, it's really interesting. So we were able to, when we set out to do the compensation report, there were really two things that we wanted to achieve. One was we got asked all the time last year about what I should be paying for different positions. What are TSPs doing for increases this year? Obviously, wage inflation played a large role in that. But for every TSP out there, compensation's about 80% of their expenses. So it's really important to get this right. And with all the great resignation, everything else going on the last couple of years, there were just a huge amount of requests for us for some objective data on the industry for comp. And up until 2021, I ran an MSP that was, when I left, we were about 85 employees. And this was a constant challenge, getting data that's really specific to our positions. And our positions in MSPs and other TSPs are different than enterprise IT. So trying to get level 1, 2, 3 numbers, trying to get project manager numbers within an MSP, all of these are really tough things to get your arms around. So mission number one was, let's get accurate data out there that reflects worldwide what's going on. So in our comp report, about 300 pages of it are just tables of data. And I can show you a few of those as examples, but it's intended. There's over 50 MSP specific positions, and it's really designed to give a bunch of different looks at the same position. So there's regional data, there's data by experience level, by position. So number one was really get some data out there that if I'm running my MSP, I can look at that and say, what should I be paying and what should I be doing for increases, etc. Number two was because we benchmark the industry every quarter for profitability, we were able to go a step further and do something that literally nobody else can do because nobody else has both the profitability and the comp data. And so we looked at, okay, we know what drives profitability. We know who's the most profitable and the least profitable out there. Are there any differences in how they're paying their people? And the differences were really remarkable. So what you are alluding to there, and first of all, anybody who wants a free copy of the executive summary of this or to buy the full report, the QR code is right there. They can go in and there's about a 12-page executive summary that's free and covers a few of these concepts. So what you're talking about is the best in class pay less than the median and the bottom quartile. So specifically in staff positions, it's shown here. So you can see best in class pay less than the median, and the bottom quartile actually pays the most for staff positions. And the same thing is true for manager positions, with one notable exception, of course, and that being the blue line, the owner. If you're running a best in class TSP, you're able to to pay yourself more because you're more profitable. So the same thing held true with raises. In 2022, the bottom quartile, in other words, the least profitable, and in 2022, 100% of the bottom quartile was actually unprofitable. The bottom quartile paid over 50% of their increases were more than 6%. The best in class paid, they didn't get off scot-free exactly, they still paid 32% were more than 6%. And across the board, you can see across all three, medium, bottom quartile, and best in class, they all paid about 80% of their increases or more were more than 3%, which is a historical increase norm. But there's a huge difference between paying increases of 7, 8, 9% or more and paying increases of 4, 5, 6%. So the best in class paid the smallest increases relatively, and the bottom quartile was planning on paying the biggest increases for this year as well. So to your question, how do they do it? Well, the takeaway from that data is not that that you should go cut your staff's pay or just decide I'm going to pay everybody the least. Both of those strategies are unlikely to turn out well, and particularly the one on cutting pay, that's a really bad strategy. There's a couple of ways to look at it, and this is what I think really drove the answer to this, Dave. One scenario would be, okay, let's say I'm just going to pay less as a profitable MSP, and I'm going to pay more as a less profitable MSP. So we'll use the We Work Hard for No Profits instead of bottom quartile, and We Like Profits as the top quartile, best in class, and the We're Average as the median, as average MSPs tend to be. So if you looked at the median pay for a level one support and you broke it up by inexperienced, medium experience, and really experienced, that's exactly what's shown in the average there. So if you're best in class and you just pay a little less and you're bottom quartile and you pay a little more, it would look like this. I don't believe that this is really what's happening for the most part, though. What we think is more likely is here is scenarios like this. So this is an example of an MSP that has six level one employees. And let's assume we've got the same three MSPs, the We Like Profits representing our best in class, We're Average, and We Work Hard for No Profits representing our bottom quartile. Let's say they all pay the exact amount, the median amount based on experience for the same position. The difference is the We Like Profits MSP staffs their organization on a higher percentage of less experienced techs. The We Work Hard for No Profits MSP has the highest percentage of experienced techs, and the average is right in the middle. If you look at the average of those six techs pay on the bottom, you can see that the We Like Profits MSP is paying the least on the equivalent level one position. The We Work Hard for No Profits is paying the most. So I think that's one factor of what's happening. The second factor is what we refer to as the hostage scenario. And the hostage scenario, you ran an MSP for many years. I assume you probably lived this. I know for me, this was typically late morning, maybe lunch hour or early afternoon on a Friday. And the hostage scenario always went roughly the same way. I'd be sitting in my office having a perfectly good day. I'd get a knock on the door. It would be a tech that I don't talk to that often saying, "Hey, Peter, do you have a few minutes?" And I knew instantly that we were now in the hostage scenario. And so the hostage scenario would then proceed to, "Wasn't looking, I like it here, you guys have been great to me, the team's great to work with, but I got reached out, LinkedIn, recruiter, enterprise IT, hospital down the street, whatever. It's they're offering me 20, 30% more. So now I have a decision I have to make. Either I can say, if I match, will you stay? And if they if they say yes and I do match, now my comp for that equivalent position's totally out of whack. Now I've just taken this one position, they're up 20-30%, and I've kept them, at least for now. Or if I'm able to say, hey, you know, you've been great here. I've really enjoyed having you work here, Dave. I'm glad we hired you 3 years ago, 2 years ago. That sounds like a great opportunity. I wish you the best. I'm sorry to see you go, but if you know anybody else who's starting out in their career and looking for a great opportunity, will you send them to us and will you keep in touch? The best in class guys have built their service operation, their factory, around three principles. They're really tight on their target customer profile. They know who they want to get and who they'll walk away from. They have a very singular tech stack, and they're selling a higher ratio of all-in, fully managed contracts. So those three things allow those providers to be in a better position. Now, it's not absolute. There's going to be times you have to match, but in short, that's a key factor to what we've seen as we've gone in and looked at it.
And in a way, they're essentially much more willing to let somebody walk out the door because of the way they run operationally. Is that a fair summary?
That's very fair. So I would compare it, and we'll use a sports analogy. The best in class folks are much more, those leaders look at their organizations much more like a high school or college program does. So let's say I'm a college coach. My job is to recruit in the best and the most talented with the highest level of upside, to coach them up and to be the best players they can be, people, et cetera, while they're with me. And I know that I have a finite amount of time. No matter how well I do, I can be the greatest coach ever to play for. They can love it here, but I know that in 4 or 5 years or maybe less, I'm going to lose them. So while they're with me, my job is to develop them. And by the way, to win. They're there to help me be successful and to help our program be successful. The bottom quartile folks are still, they've built their organization in a way that they have so much more complexity on the service delivery side that they need those much more experienced folks because they can't run, given all the complexity they've got. It takes them too long to bring new people in and coach them up and develop them and get them productive. So yeah, you're just in a much better, the best in class folks are in a much better position. They've built a lot around process. They're able to train their people faster. They're able to get greener people in and have a higher percentage of them. And they understand that for them to be profitable, they can't afford to have all level two or three techs. It just doesn't work.
It's interesting. Now, I covered this on the show, and I've been dying to ask you about this because one of the things some of the listeners asked me was, hey, is this bigger orgs? Like, what does the data set look like that service leadership's looking at? Because are these smaller, are they excluding the MSPs? Is this what's happening at the big ones? Can you give us a little bit of insight into the demographics of those that you're looking at to get this sense?
Sure. We have all sizes of MSPs. We don't have many MSPs that are sub 5 employees. They tend to not have the accounting sophistication to benchmark and be in our data set. We do have some of them in our comp data, but not very many of them. One of the misconceptions I hear all the time is that to be one of the really profitable folks, to be in our definition best in class is the top quartile profitability, that you have to be a certain size, that you have to be big enough to have scale, to be able to have a sales engine that's big enough. And I had a true story. I was at Evolve meetings last year, and I walked into one of the rooms and did an industry update as we do at the Evolve meetings. And one of the folks in there said, well, Peter, that's really interesting, but everybody in this room is bigger. We're doing a lot of acquisitions. We're private equity backed for the most part. And we all know in this room that the only way to be best in class, top quartile, is to be small, because the smaller MSPs, the owner is doing sales, they're doing tickets, project management, back office. And so they're able to just be a lot more cost effective than we all can be in this room. And I said, well, that's not factually correct. In our best in class, most profitable, we have big companies, we have little companies, we have rural companies, we have metro companies, we have international, we have US. And same thing with our bottom quartile, our folks that are losing money. We have some really large companies that are losing a bunch of money today, and we have a lot of really small ones. So it's not correlated to size or location or any of that. And he's like, well, yeah, we'll agree to disagree. So we just went back and forth for a few minutes. And I left the room, we wrapped up, and I go into the next room, start doing the industry update. And one of the guys in there said, well, Peter, I got to interrupt you. You should know that everybody in this room is sub $2 million of revenue. And so we all know in this room that we can't be top quartile because we don't have economies of scale on sales and marketing. And we don't have back office capabilities to really ramp up efficiently. So we know that we've got to get big to be best in class. So common misconception in the database is that you have to be big or small. And our database is made up of both. We've got providers all over the world. We benchmark 10 different predominant business models, the two largest being infrastructure managed service providers and product centric, or also known as VARs. But we actually benchmark other business models as well. And so we see it all.
It's super funny for two data guys who always the pushback you get is, well, you don't know. Despite us looking at the data, I have to always smile and go, that is one of the big pushbacks that I always get too, is that, well, you don't know. And I laugh and go, well, I'm just looking at all the data.
Yeah. I mean, I ran an MSP for 12 years, and 11 of those years we benchmarked with service leadership. And I laugh in hindsight, looking back at some of the debates that I had with Paul Dipple and Brian O'Connell, having some of the exact same arguments that I hear all the time now. And when you look at the data and you really pick it apart, there's a correlation between doing certain things right and profitability. So you can fight it, but there's definitely a correlation that's there.
Right. We spend a lot of time researching people. This is why we understand it. Now, I want to shift our focus a little bit here to, you made a comment recently, and I know this is in the data, you know, around 30% of providers are break even or lose money. And this is fascinating to me, partly because it allows me to do a wonderful quip of, you know, roughly one in three posters on Reddit is losing money. You should remember that. But I actually want to actually dig into that a lot because, you know, we can look at it from the perspective of like, look, we're all chasing the best in class because you want to get to that level. But actually, I think it's also really useful to understand why such a large portion of the industry isn't making money. What's the insight that you look at when you're looking at the data? Is what's going on with this nearly one in three portion of the population not making any money?
Yeah, so what you're referring to, Dave, is this data. This is our Q1 23 MSP benchmark data. So best in class cutoff to get into best in class was 18.1% adjusted EBITDA, and average was 23.6. So the best in class, the top 25%, they're doing really well. The bottom quartile cutoff, and we don't use the term, but we'll say the worst in class, their cutoff was -2.2% or less. So by definition, 100% of them lost money in Q1. And that's been the case for many quarters now. So you also have a chunk of the median. Anybody who is 0 to -2.2 lost money as well. They're technically in the median, but they're still losing money. So if you add those up, it's 31% of the industry in Q1 lost money. Now, you've also got another chunk of providers that are flying their plane right at treetop level. They're at 1, 2, 3%. And why it's the case? Well, first of all, there's a bunch of ways. There's several characteristics of a high operational maturity level run MSP. So there's certain best practices of ways to do things. There's a million bad ways to do things. And our industry is not like, let's say, the car dealership industry, where we have 100 years of maturity. Now, we are at a point where we've got about 10 to 12 years now of the majority of MSPs being over 3.0 operational maturity level on a scale of 1 to 5. So the industry's gotten better, but we consistently see about 25 to 30% of the providers out there that are OML 1 and 2 providers. They're not doing the right things in their business. So that begs the question that you asked, which is why? If we know how to run an MSP, why do we still have so many MSPs out there that are struggling to deliver profitability? I would give you a few different theories on it. Number one is that our industry is still dominated by a very strong technologist who start the pattern. You start an MSP, you're a strong engineer, you have a good customer relationship, you decide to hang a shingle, you start your business, you hustle, you add a few more customers, you add a few more employees. There's still a majority of MSPs out there that are under that model. There may be 5, 10, 12, 15 employees. And nothing wrong with that. I mean, that entrepreneurial spirit has driven our industry. But oftentimes what you see in those providers is that they're really good at delivering customer satisfaction and operating technology. They're not as good necessarily at scaling up a sales operation. They're not as great at making data-driven business decisions focused on profitability. And so just generally change management within the business can be more of a struggle. One thing to note is that the bottom quartile, it's not like the same companies are in it quarter in and quarter out. And the reason is you can't survive there. You're losing money. So what we see a lot of quarters is a company will be, maybe they're at 1-3% profitability. Next quarter, they add some expenses or they lose a customer and they dip down and now they're losing money. And so they go out and they land a couple new customers. So now maybe they're back above, they've got their head just above water. And so you'll see this pattern, because if you're bottom quartile, you're either going to go out of business because you either don't have any more money to invest in the business or you don't want to, and you got to pay the bills. You're going to really start hemorrhaging customers because you don't have the money to invest in your business or buy new tools you need to and add the people that you need to be adding to scale up. So maybe you'll be acquired. There's a marketplace for non-performing MSPs, and they're going to sell at about 20% of the valuation of an equivalent profitability MSP would, or equivalent revenue MSP would, who's profitable. But you just can't stay there. So you see in the bottom and the median this in and out. Best in class, we see 80% roughly of the providers who are in it every quarter. They were in it last quarter. They were in it the quarter before. I mean, once you know how to run your business and make that kind of money, you just don't change it. So you tend to stay there quarter after quarter.
Do you have specific data on the bottom in terms of the numbers that you sense that churn out? Do you know? Do you have any insights into that?
Because there's only three possible scenarios if you're bottom quartile losing money. Number one is you write more checks into the business and at some point you don't have the ability or willingness to. Number two is you sell your business. And number three is you go out of business. I guess number four is you find a religion and you fix those things that you need to fix and you start running your business in a different way and you grow into the median and maybe ultimately best in class. But those are the only scenarios. So
the last question I want to ask you today is, so you're obviously newer to service leadership, but not newer to the space. You mentioned you've run an MSP before, but the actual thing I wanted to ask you about is you've got a law degree. And that's a bit of a unique element for those of us that do come at this from a technology perspective. What do you think that adds to your perspective when you do this analysis with that legal background?
Well, it added a lot to running an MSP. I took over a larger MSP, not large at the time. It was 17 employees and about $2.2 million of revenue. But this is becoming, especially in certain verticals, and we service mostly banks and credit unions. that was obviously heavily regulated. So my law degree really helped there. It helped on a lot of the contract issues. But most of my background has been in business leadership. So prior to coming here, I was CEO of a fintech company for 7 years. And the MSP I took over was a turnaround, and the owner was looking for somebody who had the ability to do a turnaround. And I had done a few of those in my career. And he was looking for somebody who really knew how to grow a business. And I had done that several times in my career. The law degree was a cherry on top because we were regulated by the FDIC and the Fed. So the skill set a law degree brings to the table is really valuable with running a business. In terms of analyzing the data, I think you go through law school, you learn how to read things with a skeptical eye. And you learn how to look at multiple angles on everything. So they say that you go to law school, you learn all the answers. The reality is you go to law school, you know how to figure out the answers. That's really what you learn when you get a law degree and when you practice law. And so being able to look at the data on the industry and ask a lot of skeptical questions and really look at things from multiple angles is probably from this position the best value of the law degree. But my background's a really weird one, Dave. It's not one that I, coming out of undergrad, I would ever have mapped out or that I would end up running an IT company and ultimately end up in the industry for this long. But it's a great industry. And I got into it at the right time. It's an industry that was really starting to come into its own. And it's an industry that what we've seen over time is a lot of the MSPs have evolved into much more professionally managed organizations. And so that's really my background as well. So that's really fit well there.
Well, that's an optimistic note to end this with. Peter, I'm looking forward to ongoing conversations. What's next in terms of the research that you're working on?
We're working on some updates and some additions we're going to make to this report for next year. So we'll reopen the data submission window again in October this year. We're going to open it a little earlier so we can get some of the conclusions out a little earlier this year. And then next is at the end of the month, our annual profitability report is going to be coming out. So that's really the industry Bible on profitability of all 10 predominant business models. And will be about 250 pages of really light reading, bedtime reading for you and all of your viewers. But that's coming out at the end of June, and we'll have an executive summary version available for that as well.
Well, that's those are good days for data analysts like me. So I'm looking forward to it. And we'll have to have you back to talk more about that. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Looking forward to it, Dave.
The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSPradio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.